Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday night. It is 7 o'clock. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, the wonderful, charming, absorbing Jim Christina. And sitting in the studio tonight is no Bobby Jean. She is at her concert series, Out West Concert Series tonight, which they are featuring Kelly Grombacher. He's from New Orleans. And I guess the guy is just, like, awesome. And if you, I believe there's still tickets available. If you call now, you can probably get a ticket. If that is, if you're not going to listen to this show. 661-347-9700 is the number you want to give a call to. I believe they have tickets left, and their show starts at 8 o'clock. And Russ, of course, who is usually with me on the fourth Thursday of the month, I believe is tromping around someplace in Yellowstone National Park chasing bears, wolves, coyotes, buffalo, whatever it is he's going to do, and he's probably doing it half naked, and training him too, because that's what he does for a living. He's a dog trainer. Okay, the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, the good folks at Black Dog. And if you have, if you're a new writer and you need some help getting started with publishing and agents and stuff, give us a call. The number there is 805-795-3165. And they'll be more than happy to give you a hand. And, of course, by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center, who is, of course, having their show tonight. And that would be a good place for you to give a call if you don't want to listen to The Writer's Block and you want to go listen to a really good musician tonight, Kerry Grombacher. So give them a holler if you want. The number again there is 661-347-9700. And, of course, as always, every week, we are sponsored by Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And, you know, we mention Target Freight every week, and we do that because they have a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. But have we mentioned that TFM Truckload is the finest in the industry and gets your freight there every time, on time, at the rates you need for your transportation costs? Call today, 844-653-7789, and tell them you heard it on The Writer's Block. And they'll have a little something extra for you. And while we're at it, if you are an LTL shipper, which is less than truckload, you are probably looking for the best rates at the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. You will not be sorry. And those are personal friends of mine, and we're never sorry. We just do business with them all the time. Okay, if you want to call in and talk to tonight's guest, who is sitting right here looking over me wild-eyed and going, oh, I'm on radio. The number here in the station is 818-602-4929. That number, again, is 818-602-4929, and that rings right into the studio, so you don't have to worry about anyone else other than me answering the phone. Okay, I have a studio full tonight. They're all up against the wall. I've told them no partying. If they have a flask, they have to share. There's no drugs, no dancing, no screaming out loud. Tonight's guest is a young lady who's a playwright pursuing her MFA in creative writing and writing for the performing arts at the University of California, Riverside. She received her BA from Brigham Young University in, of course, Utah, in theater art studies with an emphasis on playwriting and minor in English. Oh, good for you. Yeah. Yeah, minor in English is always good. Mm-hmm. You know, it tells you where to put the commas, which is something I never learned. Chelsea's plays have been competed in Chelsea's plays have competed in regional and national competitions with the Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival, have been performed as part of the Brigham Young University production season and UCR's New Play Festival, and have received national recognition and awards. Wow. That's, like, huge. That's really huge. So would you please welcome to The Writer's Block Miss Chelsea Hickman.
Thank you for having me.
Now's about the time when we say thanks for the clap. Okay. National recognition and awards. Let's start there because I want to hear about that.
Okay, sure. So a few years ago, I started writing my first 10-minute play in my first ever playwriting class at BYU. Mm-hmm. Not expecting it to go anywhere, but my playwriting teachers believed in my writing and believed in what I wanted to say. So I wrote my first 10-minute play, and then a year later, I submitted it to the Kennedy Center Region 8 Theater Festival. Region 8 is Utah, Hawaii, Southern California, Nevada, and Arizona.
Okay.
Yeah. So big competition. I didn't think anything would come of it. And then I got second alternate, and with just that, I was over the moon. And then I actually ended up going to the competition. I was one of the top, I think, 8 plays out of all those states. And then when I went to the competition, we had a stage reading. I got a director from a school in California, and we rehearsed. I had actual actors working on something I wrote a year before and had gone through so many drafts. And then by the end of the week, I found out that I was a national semifinalist.
Wow.
Yeah. So my 10-minute play was the top 16 in the nation, and it was sent to the Kennedy Center in D.C. To be picked through and looked at by other writers and professionals. And yeah, it was a huge honor.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Sounds like it.
Yeah.
So now you're at UCR.
Mm-hmm.
And you're studying to be a professional playwright.
That's right.
And you have submitted a play for us to look at, and I actually did read it.
Yes.
And it's really good.
Thank you so much.
It is really good. I love the characters. And I was thinking of the father.
Mm-hmm.
And the poor guy just has gone through hell.
Yes, he has.
And he doesn't know how to convey that to his daughter. No. Everything he says to his daughter just pisses her off even more.
Right.
Yeah. So what's the name of the play?
Mercy Meal.
Mercy Meal. Mm-hmm. And they're in a Blimpie's.
Yeah, they're in a Blimpie's diner.
They're in a Blimpie's diner, yeah. And the whole play takes place in the Blimpie's diner. And it's only about 50 minutes, mm-hmm. if that. Mm-hmm. It's 30 pages. And
yep.
And it's just, I mean, it's very, very, very well done. Where did that idea come from?
Well, a lot of places. I think it just originated from my own life experiences with my own father. My own experiences with family members, but then I built upon it,
mm-hmm.
To make it its own separate piece.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Kansas, and my dad would take me out to Blimpie's when I was a girl, and yeah, so it was a very fond memory for me, and that's why I wanted to set it in a Blimpie's, just for personal reasons, as well as, you know, I think sometimes the most dramatic things that we go through happen in the most inconvenient places.
Mm.
It's true.
Yeah, it's true.
So I thought setting it in a public place and they're having this conversation that should be possibly private between the two of them, and heightening the stakes by putting it in a public place.
Mm-hmm. 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 And this takes place like a half an hour after they bury her mother and his ex-wife.
That's right.
So emotions right now are kind of raw, and they're on everybody's sleeve.
Definitely, definitely.
And so that really comes out. I mean, that really truly does. And you can tell just by the way that she really wants nothing to do with his excuses.
Mm-hmm. She's had it.
And he is not too sure how to take her.
Right.
So they're just, I mean, they're sparring, and all they need now is the rapiers and, you know, and the little hearts on their chest so they can stab each other to death.
Oh, wow, yes.
Yes, there you go, see. I know this. I myself wrote a two-act play, mm-hmm. called An Evening with Tom Horn. And getting dialogue, and I'm going to ask you about dialogue now, because dialogue is really hard to come up with. Getting dialogue to the point where it's honed enough where you want someone else to say it. And I don't know if that really makes sense to anyone who's listening, but a dialogue has to be natural.
Yes.
And if it's not natural, most actors don't even want anything to do with it. It has to come out of your mouth like it's your words. And I found that, because I do write dialogue in my novels too,
mm-hmm.
It was a little bit easier for me, but I don't know about you. So talk to me about your dialogue and how you came up with the dialogue you're researching the characters, because the father's Irish.
Yes, he is.
Yes.
Yeah, he has an Irish accent. So when I approach dialogue, actually when I first started writing, I mostly did like novels or short stories when I first started, and I loved description and I loved setting up scenes and describing people, but I was awful at dialogue. I had a really hard time with it. And then by the time I was in college and I started taking my playwriting classes, obviously the dialogue is what needs to be moving the story forward more so than how the set looks, right? So it really forced me to actually speak out loud while I'm writing, and that has helped me so much in shaping my words and shaping the lines as they happen. And I also do act. So when I've been in shows or I've rehearsed in things where the dialogue is really hard coming out of my mouth, I know how difficult that can be. And I don't want my actors to feel that way when they're reading my lines.
So when you're writing, you go back and you speak the dialogue after you've written a piece of dialogue to see if it works?
Yep. I sit at my computer in the living room alone and I just talk to myself while I'm writing, and it really helps me.
No worries, I do the same thing.
Okay, good.
I think most writers do.
Yes, yeah.
Because I find myself, when I'm writing, especially the Irish accent, because Irish is really hard to write. And if you get it right, the intonation on the vowels and everything else is going to be correct.
Correct, yeah.
If you don't get it right, it just sounds like a guy talking.
Yeah, or it sounds like you're trying too hard.
Right.
Or you're trying to be too on the nose with it.
Right.
And that's not good.
It's like writing an Irishman saying good morning. It wouldn't be good morning. It would be good morning. Morning. M-A-R-N-I-N.
Yeah.
Yeah. People talk differently, and most people do not speak complete sentences, and most people do not speak correct English.
Right.
So when people say, I'm going to the store, they don't say, I'm going to the store. What they say, in most cases, what I have found, is that they say, I'm going to the store. So the word would be ta instead of to.
Right.
And duh instead of the.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a lot of writers don't catch that. So they put in a lot of unnecessary stuff.
Right, yeah. And I think that's the thing about playwriting in general, is that you need to be streamlined with everything. You need to get to your point with every line. Because what should be speaking is the subtext, not all the words on top. And the more that you can streamline all your lines, make sure that you're using every single word that you need to move the story forward, your subtext will speak for you. Yeah, so you don't need to get caught up in all the words. Just let whatever.
I found a word, though, that you used, and I happen to know this word because one of my best friends when I lived in Washington State was from South London. And along with oi, which they used a lot. The other word was bollocks. And a lot of people actually, but you spelled it B-U-L-L-O-C-K-S. Bollocks is a word that the English use. It means shite. For lack of a separate term. And I found that amazing and very refreshing because you very rarely ever see that word. And so, and most people, like I just said, wouldn't even know what that means.
I had to do a lot of research when writing this play, and not to put my own dad on the spot, but he does sometimes speak in an Irish accent, and like he does use those words, and so I've gotten used to hearing my dad speak like that, and it was just, okay, think about my dad, and also do your own research, and make it this own separate character, and how he would say his lines.
Now let me ask you about your desire and your motivation to become a playwright, because that has to be like up in left field for most people. I mean, most people with a modicum of intelligence would go, playwright? No, I don't think
rude.
So. what drove you to want to do this?
Well, long story or short story?
Well, give me whatever story you want to give me.
Okay, sure. So, I think it just starts in high school. My mom published a book when I was actually, middle school. It's already in middle school. My mom published a book, and that was a huge eye-opening experience for me. And I wanted to be like my mom. I wanted to write novels, and that's what I wanted to do. And I would tell everyone I knew that that's what I wanted. Then in high school, I tried out for the school musical my junior year, and I found out that I really loved theater. By the time I was in college, I was doing acting at BYU. I was a pre-acting major, and that is a very competitive program.
Oh, no doubt.
I know. So only about, I think, 20 or 15 graduate every senior year, so from the program, when they've milled through, hundreds of students. Anyway, so by my sophomore year, I didn't quite make it into the program. Mm-hmm. And when I read my notes back from the audition, the first thing that came into my brain was, you should take a playwriting class. I think you're ready to take a playwriting class. And so I took that disappointment of not being in the program into my playwriting classes throughout the rest of my college career, and that is exactly what where I needed to be. That's where I fit. Because it was a process realizing that I should have been a playwright much sooner, because when I was taking my acting classes, working on those things, I would find myself really focusing in on the words in the monologues that I was performing. Mm-hmm. And when my teachers or my TAs would be working with me, they're like, Chelsea, there's a build in this sentence, so you need to have a build here. And why are you saying this word at this time, Chelsea? You know? And so looking back on it, why didn't I start writing plays sooner? So it was trial and error that got me into being a playwright. And I know that it's not about money, being a playwright. I totally know that, but...
Well, it is if you're Arthur Miller or somebody like that.
But
sure.
I am not Arthur Miller.
Well, no, I mean, no, not hardly.
So you just kind of have to go in with, I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to share my truth with the world. Mm-hmm. That's what the theater is about, sharing your truth and being honest.
Wow. That's kind of cool.
Thanks.
I never actually had never heard that, and I spent my entire high school and half of my college career in theater. Mm-hmm. And I never heard that.
Oh, well, you heard that a lot at BYU. You heard,
you hear a lot of stuff at BYU. I don't hear anywhere else.
But no, one thing that was hit over and over again was that when you're acting, when you're connecting with your partner on stage, it's about being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. It's about being honest mm-hmm. in that moment. And we heard the same exact thing in all of our playwriting classes. Just be honest with your characters, be honest with yourself, and mm-hmm. your writing will speak for itself.
Mm-hmm. My drama teacher when I was in high school, his name was Clayton Liggett. The guy was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And he used to stand at the back of the auditorium. And the only other word that came out of his mouth was project.
Yeah.
So people now say, you talk too loud. I say, no, man. It's something you learn in theater. You just can't speak quietly. And you learn to speak loudly without even thinking about it.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, because you have to get across to however many people are in this audience. And, you know, project was a word I learned to fear. And the other thing he used to say was he would come up to the front of the stage and lean his elbows on the stage and said, so, what was your name again, stupid? What was my name in the show? I forgot. Oh, yeah, George or something. And
George.
He goes, okay, George, mm-hmm. why don't you own this part? This is your part. Why don't you own it?
Yeah.
Why do you sound like you're reading a script?
Right.
Yeah.
Good life lesson there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when I switched over to drama chorus and I got away with it. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, talk to me about your English subminor, or your minor, because, mm-hmm. I mean, English to me was always a very easy subject.
Okay, yeah, sure. So with my English studies that I did, they were mostly creative writing classes. Mm-hmm. I didn't really venture into, like, Victorian literature mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. that side, the intellectual side, I guess, of the English department. Mm-hmm. Mine was more of, like, the practical application mm-hmm. of English. So, and that was another stepping stone in helping me get over the fact that I didn't make it into the acting program mm-hmm. was because I was also taking these creative writing classes. Mm-hmm. And I realized that that was where I felt really comfortable. Mm-hmm. So I took an amazing fiction writing class with Carol Lynch Williams. Do you know that author? Oh, okay. She's wonderful. I hope she's listening because she just has so much faith in her students. And she really writes these stories that I can personally connect with, and that's kind of what I'm wanting to accomplish on stage. She writes about these very complicated women mm-hmm. dealing with complicated subjects, and they're strong too. Mm-hmm. So I love you, Carol.
Where do you want to be in 5 years?
That's a good question. I think in 5 years, I would really love to be doing children's theater, possibly up in the Pacific Northwest. They have a really good children's program with theater there up in Oregon. So doing children's theater, writing my own shows, of course, mm-hmm. teaching. I haven't yet decided if my route should be high school theater, elementary, or what. I mean, wherever I get plugged, I'll be happy to do that. But I do see myself excelling at teaching university theater mm-hmm. with university-level students.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're going. Your plan now is you've got a one act play that's terrific.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, well, you don't have to keep saying thank you.
Okay.
But it's always appreciated.
Yeah.
I'm going to assume that you want to expand on that. You want to make. You want to write a two act, three act, a full. Mm-hmm. Full on stage presence play that takes, you know, an hour and a half to.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, I have been drafting up, you know, so many drafts of the structure for a possible full length production of this show. Right now, I'm currently working on several other projects all at the same time during this last year of my grad program. So, and that's one thing I'm so grateful with this grad program at UCR. Is because I'm pounding out so many pieces of theater every single quarter. Mm-hmm. My portfolio has doubled, and I couldn't be more, you know, happy with all the work that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
I like Mercy Mill, this play, I started it fall quarter of last year, and it's gone through, I think, like 700 drafts. not really. just like eight.
That's
or
a
so.
Lot.
And it's still not done yet. And I think that's one of the great things about playwriting. You can just keep working and working and working on it. And
unlike a novel.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. You just pound that out and then you're done, right?
No. No. You pound it out
and
then you get an editor to tell you how stupid you are. Then, in my particular case, it happens to be my wife, Jerry. And then they go back and then you have to rewrite.
Mm-hmm.
And then you still have to rewrite. And then you still have to rewrite. And no, it's not a pound out. I wish it were.
Yeah.
I wish I were, you know, that perfect where I see I'm one I put and in a lot, you know, and I commas work better. Again, they're shorter.
Yep.
You know, they don't count as a word on word count.
Yeah.
And does. But it's different. It's totally different writing a novel than it is a play. And when I wrote my play, I sat down and I pounded it out in like 3 days maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then about two or three rewrites, and then we produced it.
Oh, wow. That's a very quick process.
It was. But it was like 2 months from the time we started it till the time it got produced. And, and we did it as a dinner theater, and it was so much fun.
Yeah.
I mean, we had like gunfire and people dying and blood and all kinds of crap, and it was just a lot of fun.
That sounds right up my alley.
It was fun. It was fun. Which leads me back to you. Now, you've talked about your life experiences. What life experiences do you have now that are going to lead you into other genre of the plays?
Yeah, sure.
Because you're fairly young.
Yes.
I mean, well, I'm not going to say how old you are.
No.
We're not going to say where you live either.
Okay, good.
I will say your husband's here, though, and he's going to disavow any lie you tell.
So just life experiences that might help me branch out in other genres. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have lived a very dramatic life. It's, you know, not all rainbows and sprinkles and puppies and cupcakes. So I feel like that has really helped me write some of my, you know, beginning of novels.
Mm-hmm.
I have written some poetry, but that was mostly in high school when I was, you know, upset with my parents, right?
Depressed.
I think some of the things that have really shaped me the most, possibly like with my relationship with my religion, as well as relationship with my husband, and family members.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now be careful, because there's like six of them sitting in here.
No,
and I noticed your mother-in-law just pulled the axe out of her purse. So.
Oh, no. We should all be on our toes.
We should all be on our... Well, if we have any left by the end of this hour.
Right. I do love expressing these different moments mm-hmm. in my life through mm-hmm. other mediums. Mm-hmm. I think just right now I'm pretty comfortable with, you know, doing it through a play format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, when you were writing, and I know you're gonna go forward. You're gonna probably do some great and wonderful things. Is it required for you guys as playwrights? I don't know, because I'm just a mealy mouth novelist.
Hmm.
Is it a requirement for you guys to get agents, or is it recommended for you to get an agent?
Yeah.
And try to push your stuff forward to a producer,
yeah,
I guess, is what you're trying to do.
Right, yes, okay. Yeah. There is a heavy push to get an agent to take those necessary steps forward in your career. I have yet to really know exactly how I need to take those stepping stones,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, I will figure it out, just like all these other young playwrights, young screenwriters. We will figure it out together.
Sure. So, mm-hmm. Well, and you've always got Google.
Right. Yeah. Google. You know, Google will solve everything.
Well, pretty much. You know, other than the Russians trying to steal my emails, they can't figure that one out yet. Of course, the Russians have no. I don't know what they do with my emails. There's nothing on them. It's nonsense. As you're writing, and I know that. Every writer I've talked to, and believe we talked to a whole bunch of writers, and we have read a whole bunch of books in the year and a half we've been on the air here.
Yeah.
We have noticed, and I particularly, because I write to the dark side a little bit, that a lot of writers tend to drop into the dark side as they're writing, and I think when they finally realize it, they'll come up with a solution to get them out of it.
Right.
Or back up and start again, or at least start that. The chapter again, or the act again, or whatever we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel yourself going down to the dark side?
Oh yeah, definitely. I get so attached to my characters. I get attached to the story that whatever story I'm wanting to tell. You know, my husband, he has to make sure sometimes that I'm doing okay, right? He's like, you need to step back sometimes. And I think us as writers, we just want to tell the best story possible.
Right.
And we have a lot of empathy.
Right.
I think that's very, very important for a writer. You need to have empathy for your characters. You need to have empathy for different stories than yours. And sometimes for me, that empathy does cross that line into the dark side, you know, and it does have an effect on you. It drains you.
Mm-hmm.
So learning how to balance, you know, the hustle, like the hard work, as well as the relaxation days and a mental, you know, break.
Now, I've noticed that characters, and I find my characters doing this, because I write a series of characters that show up in almost every book I write.
Mm-hmm.
There's some characters that started in the dark area and came out, and one of the chapters in this new book that I'm writing, the opening sentence in this new chapter is, Buck was a gunfighter. And that's it. But he was.
Yeah.
You know, not anymore. And then we go on to explain that he's not anymore, but he was a gunfighter. And he has a dark side to him. And every character that I've ever written, and I've written a lot of them, they all seem to have a dark side, and it will come out, but they never tell you when it's going to come out.
Right.
It just, all of a sudden, you're writing along, and you think that things are going great, and all of a sudden, this character will do a turn on you.
Yes.
And they will go, like, down, and you go, whoa, where did that come from? I can see in your eyes. Yeah, I know that feeling.
Oh, yes, I totally do. You know, actually, just a few days ago in my playwriting workshop, I had this idea of how my character was supposed to be. And I've only just started this very first draft. Like, we're only 3 weeks in on this draft. So very, you know, rudimentary ideas of who this character is. And I want him to be likable. And then I sent in my pages and we all read them. And then in class a few days ago, everyone was like, we hate this guy. He's awful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, characters do take that turn. They do all of a sudden.
But was he a good character?
Yeah, he's going to get there.
Yeah?
He's going to get there. I'm planning on working on this play for, you know, at least another 5 years. I'm just kidding. Like, 2 years maybe. But, you know, just a refining process.
Now, the shows that I was in when I was in high school and the shows I was in when I was in college and some of the stuff that I've seen produced, I noticed that there's and novels, again, are totally different. I've noticed that some of the bad guys in plays always have a redeeming quality.
Yeah.
You know, and we always have to get through to that redeeming quality. Now, I can't think of one right off the top of my head. Wait a minute. Well, no, I won't even think. I don't know. Anyway, I did one called Blind Alley when I was a senior in high school, and the bad guy was the only character that was a bad guy that did not have a redeeming quality.
Wow, okay.
You know, he was just a bad guy.
Right, right.
Yeah. And so when I write bad guys, I think, okay, no, he's not going to have a redeeming quality. He's a bad guy.
Oh, really?
And I love writing bad guys
because
it lets me do things that I couldn't normally do. You know?
Just scummy things.
Scummy things.
Yeah.
So when you're sitting here and you're writing a character and you're writing dialogue and you're looking at where this is going to go, it's got to have a path that you're going to go down, usually of the least resistance. Now, if you're really smart, which I'm sure you are, you pick the other side. You pick the path that gives you the most resistance because it gives you a much better character.
Exactly. Theater is all about conflict.
Exactly.
Yeah. Who's going to go see a movie? Who's going to go see, you know, a piece of theater and people just always agree? on everything, that's boring. That's not good art. So going back to these characters that, you know, they have this dark side, I think every single character should be complex. Mm-hmm. There should be a light and a dark in every single mm-hmm. character. And when we were trying to think of examples of that, mm-hmm. I'm thinking of Aaron Burr from Alexander Hamilton, the musical. Mm-hmm. I love Aaron Burr. I love this character because, you know, you see logically and realistically how he goes through this journey of, you know, ultimately killing Alexander Hamilton. And you see him make these choices and him go through all these emotional states. And it's logical. It's a very logical, structured way that he gets there. Mm-hmm. And in the end, you know, you are torn. You're torn. And that's the purpose of writing these villains,
sure.
right?
But that's the desired outcome.
It is. It definitely is. You know, the audience should be... They shouldn't be spoon-fed, this is the bad guy and this is the good guy.
I agree.
They should be torn, like, who am I rooting for? And, you know, why do I feel this complex feeling inside
uh-huh.
me? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now, we had talking out in the lobby earlier before mm-hmm. we went on the air.
Yeah.
And you say, I've tried to write novels before. I
yeah.
can't write a novel. He says, I'm thinking 300 pages versus 80 pages. And yours are, like, triple-spaced.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, depending on what writing.
It's like a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, that's 120 pages for a screenplay.
Right.
And you're going, wow, like 300 pages, you know, single or one and a half times space, you know, mm-hmm. and wow, that's a lot of words. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, actually. It definitely is. You know, and when you're writing the novel, you know, you're also focused on the interiority of the character, writing out the thoughts, writing
right.
out the feelings that are
right.
going on. Whereas obviously with theater, you lay as much seeds as possible and let the actors
right.
find the subtext and do that for you.
Right.
Right? But it's not as easy as just, you know, slapping some words on a, you know, on dialogue and then, you know, the actors will figure it out.
Right.
It's you painstakingly going over one line for 3 hours mm-hmm. to make sure that your comma is in the exact right place,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and that is the exact word that you want.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You know, I'm sitting here listening to you and mentioning the comma going in the exact right place. And
yeah.
I think in theater, it's a lot more important than in novels. And I think because of the actor has to come up with the feeling of the line,
mm-hmm.
that if the comma is in the wrong spot, he could do that 100 times and get it wrong.
Exactly.
Until we move a comma. And then all of a sudden, oh, yeah, light comes on, boom, we got it.
Yeah, that scene makes so much more sense
right.
because of where...
Right.
these lines are being placed.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're writing a scene,
mm-hmm.
now most three act plays have what, like four scenes per act? And,
well, sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we have like 12 scenes per play.
Mm-hmm.
Is each scene to you is it a completion of the thought of the action for that particular before we move on to lights down, lights back up, different scene?
Right, yeah. So I've been experimenting so much with my own writing style and how I do my scenes. But in general, I still try to stick to there's an inherent build to every scene that I'm
mm-hmm.
working on. Just like the actual play, how there's a build to it, a climax, and then,
mm-hmm.
you know, falling action. Every scene should be placed that way. In fact, every single line should have that build, and it should have a
mm-hmm.
course that it's going on. So when I am doing my scenes... I'm a personal big fan, as you saw in this one-act play, of just two characters talking
mm-hmm.
and then them leading the scene together.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I am forcing myself to have more characters on stage in one scene and seeing how they, you know, move it along
mm-hmm.
in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I noticed in Mercy Meal, and I'm big on business because Mr. Liggett, again, he beat that into our heads. You know, that's great bit of business. That bit of business sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see the father fiddling with stuff on the table, wanting to drink the coffee,
yep.
but he can't.
Yeah.
Because his daughter's sitting there, and he, of course, is an avowed alcoholic, and he keeps telling her he's going to quit drinking, and never going to quit drinking. I'm giving the entire play away. But
No, it's fine. It's
okay.
fine.
I mean, I'd have spoiler alert if anybody's listening, you know, if any one of our 12 listeners are on the air tonight. But I noticed that there's a good bit of business that can be had in that one scene, or that one act,
right.
because of the two characters and what they're doing.
Yes.
She's fiddling a lot with stuff because she doesn't know what to say to him. He's right? fiddling a lot with stuff because he doesn't know what to say with her.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a lot of stuff going on.
Right, it definitely is. And, you know, even though they're, like, sitting at a table, they're at a Blimpie's.
Mm-hmm.
When we did the little production at UCR back in May, I had an amazing director who I actually went to BYU with. We just happened to be at the same grad program. And she really understood the script, and she respected the script, and she saw moments where she could have the actors get up from the table and move around, use the chairs in a very theatrical way to mm-hmm. express what mm-hmm. I wanted. So even, you know, messing with the cardboard table setting on the table, or messing with the cigarettes in the pocket or the
mm-hmm.
flask,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's those little minute details as well as the bigger stage ideas that bring theater to life.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah, and we always used to be told that in order for business to work, number one, the audience has to recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to see what it is that you're doing.
Right.
In order to make it cogent,
right.
I guess is
mm-hmm.
the right word. And I found that, you know, you use a chair, you get to get up, go to a couch, you know, maybe walk to a bar, get a drink, blah,
mm-hmm.
blah, blah.
Right.
I use horses.
Okay, yeah.
And horses are great because, you know, they're a really great prop.
Yeah.
Most of the time, if they're really behaving, they're standing there and letting you do what you need to do. And mm-hmm. you can have full conversations with the horse. It works.
Yeah.
It works.
I've never had a full conversation with a horse before, though.
Well, I have. And I have to tell you that they can be quite understanding if you want them to be. And they also can really hurt you if they want to. Okay, I'm going to ask you the question I ask every single writer that walks in this door.
Okay.
And it seems though you are a new playwright.
I'm very new.
You are new, but you're very, very, very well-knowledged, and I have to say that.
Thank you.
Have you ever had writer's block?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like last week when I was writing this new scene, and it turns out that my character, who I, you know, thought is more likable this week, he just isn't, you know. And sometimes my husband can attest, I sit at the computer for hours just banging my head on the, you know, on my desk. Yes, I have writer's block.
She doesn't really do that though, does she, Zach? She just does she heavy sigh a lot and go, damn it.
But
how do you bring yourself out of it?
Actually, sometimes just going on a walk, getting away from the computer,
uh-huh.
Because I think writer's block is a symptom of getting inside of your own head, and, you know, just getting stuck there, and not being able to get out of it.
Uh-huh.
So I just taking a break, go getting an ice cream sandwich, you know, eating it, enjoying life outside of the laptop,
mm-hmm.
and then just going back and just seeing what happens. And
mm-hmm.
and even if those few lines that you start out with don't even make, you know, the pages that you want, that's fine, because
mm-hmm.
you are taking care of yourself, and that, and as you as a writer, that is most important.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you ever consider we don't call it self-publishing anymore. We call it independent publishing.
Mm-hmm.
A play and marketing it yourself without an agent.
You know, that's a pretty hairy thing. You know, when I went to that regional competition a few years ago for
mm-hmm.
that 10-minute play, we had a really amazing keynote speaker. And she said one thing that really stuck out to me. You need to stop waiting for someone to notice you, and you need to be doing your own work. And then, you know, after I heard that, I was like, of course, that makes sense. I can't just keep waiting for someone to see my work. I have to go out
sure.
and do it. So then the following week, I found two actors, and I got a director, and I said, hey, we're going to do my 10-minute play at BYU, Night at the HVAC. And we got rehearsal done in a week, and the show went up, and I had a full house, and it was amazing. So, it's all
wow.
about, yeah, it was pretty great.
I'll bet.
It was wonderful. So, it's about just knowing that you can't just sit and wait for great experiences to come to you. You need to work hard for them.
I think you're right. I think it's a lot of where people make their mistakes is they wait for people to come to them.
Right, yeah.
You know, you can write the best book in the world. You can write the great American novel.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just sitting there, nobody's ever going to know it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing about theater is it's a collaborative art. It's
mm-hmm.
not just something where you can sit at your laptop and keep it to yourself.
Right.
Theater is about sharing yourself with the world, sharing your honesty, like what we were talking about earlier.
Right.
So you need to know how to be talking to directors, knowing how to be comfortable with actors, mm-hmm. You know, in the set and everything. It's mm-hmm. it's not just about you when you're mm-hmm. doing theater. It's about mm-hmm. everyone else.
Yeah, it is, and it's yeah. You have so many people involved, and when you're writing a book, you have two, three people involved, mm-hmm. and it's like, and they're very close knit.
Right.
You know, actors, you have directors, stage managers, mm-hmm. you got everybody going at you.
Right. Yeah. Like with Mercy Meal, they're like, Chelsea, we're not sure if this line quite works because what if we can't see the coffee cup, you know? And like all these things I didn't quite think about, you know, just on the page, right? And then when it actually went into production, okay, I need to move this around so it makes sense on stage. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. Mm-hmm. I can see that. Hey, in the time we have left, which is kind of limited, we only got about 7 minutes.
Okay.
Give me your ultimate desire, your dream. I ask you where you wanted to be in 5 years. Now, let's talk about where is Chelsea Hickman going to be 20 years from now?
20 years. Oh,
and don't say dead because.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a downer. I don't want to be dead in 20 years. I would love to see myself possibly owning my own theater, possibly having my own theater troupe mm-hmm. that we can collaboratively work as women doing women shows, mm-hmm. complex women on stage. That's very important to me.
So you want to roll more into the complex female side of. Playwright.
Well, yeah. I mean, that is one aspect of my writing that I'm excited to get more into. But, you know, keeping it simple as well as intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
So in 20 years, I just see myself making great art, being honest, and sharing myself with anyone that would want to listen.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, you've certainly sold me. And I would, if the Mercy Meal were on anywhere else, I would probably come out and see it because I really liked reading it.
Thank you. I would love for you to come see it.
Well, are you gonna produce it again?
Oh, I would love to. You know, just like taking my own advice, go find some actors and get it up. So I will keep you posted.
Do that.
Okay.
Do that. I'm easy to get a hold of. I mean, you know, you can always tell your mother-in-law. She sees me pretty much every week. So, excuse me. Before we go, talk to me about your life's dreams. Now, they're going to be different than where do you think you're going to be in 20 years. Go from when, seventh grade to the possibilities you see on the endless horizon.
Okay. Just life in general, what I want?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not necessarily writing.
Okay.
But, you know, your life's dreams.
Yeah. Well, when I was in seventh grade, I saw my life as... like now, you know, being a wife, possibly, maybe even having a kid by now. I remember telling my friends when we were 10 years old, making a pact with them, a pinky promise, that we were both going to be married by 20, and then we were going to have a kid at the same exact time.
And how'd that work out for you?
Well, we both got married around the same time, but yeah, kids, I'm going to push that off. Very young. So yeah, but just life in general, I want to be happy. I just want to be happy, and if that means, you know, being married, and if that means being a mother, taking care of my family, then I think I've made it.
Yeah.
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 And you try to squeeze your career in there too.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, we'll just like pencil that in, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever think about becoming a drama teacher?
Oh yes, yeah. I would love that. Right now, I'm an intro to acting TA at UCR.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working with non-majors,
mm-hmm.
so it's very interesting working with like biochemical engineer.
Oh my god! that have to take the elective course,
right? Yeah, they're wanting to take it, you know, for their easy A, for their fun humanities credit, mm-hmm. you know, and mostly most of those students, they're just like, I want to not be afraid on stage anymore, or uh-huh. I want to know how to get this job and be confident in it,
sure.
right? And so I have to approach them in a very different way than I would with, you know, a very, like, accomplished actor. They already have those, toolbox things.
Well, sure, you have two different mindsets.
Mm-hmm,
you have one that's thinking about chemical engineering.
Right.
And one that's thinking about Horatio.
Yeah, exactly. But I had a student tell me yesterday, and it was so great. She said, Chelsea, you're one of the best TAs that I've ever had, and you've helped me be a more confident person. You've helped me feel comfortable on stage. And if that's all that I can accomplish, being a drama teacher, that is wonderful.
Uh-huh.
I had some amazing drama teachers in high school who helped me not be afraid of who I am. And I think that's most important when you're in high school and learning all these new things about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be confident in who you are.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
Sure. I mean, you know, high school is hard enough.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know, and especially if you're a theater major, that's really hard because then everybody looks at you and goes, geek. You know? Well, it's true. You guys chortle, but it's, you know, that's what happens. I mean, I graduated high school in 1967, so I mean, I was really a geek. It wasn't even a little geek. It was a big geek. But, you know, but we were accomplished. And I think back, how many years ago was that? Almost 50 years. Holy crap.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no. Oh, man. Holy man. Anyway, you think back and you go, but we did something good back when,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And we were noticed in high school. I mean, they didn't call us geeks, really, but we were noticed because of the things that we could do. And I'm sure that your career so far, you guys are noted for the things that you can do that other people just can't quite get there. I mean, you could write.
Mm-hmm.
You know how to punctuate.
Yes.
You know, you know how to do scenes. You know how to do acts. You know how to do a dialogue.
Right.
Show me 15 other people in the same room that can do the same thing. They're not there.
Right.
So, I mean, this is a special, special, special deal. And I'm really happy to have you here with us tonight because you're a very first playwright.
Oh, wow. Really?
So, yes, you are a very first playwright.
Oh, I'm so
and honored. And it's really cool to have you in here. And the circumstances getting you here were like,
they were so random.
I know. Like, it was just like roundabout.
It was like universes colliding. And
I know. Well, like I said, yeah. We ran into your mother-in-law every week, so, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. She goes, oh, well, maybe my daughter-in-law, you know, she's a playwright. I said, well, give her a card. You know, hey, you know, we're open for anything. That's when we were hungry for guests.
Right.
But I mean, you write another play, I'll have you back tomorrow.
Okay, yeah.
Well, not tomorrow. I don't have a show tomorrow, but.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to see my students tomorrow for.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. But I mean, I hope it was easy enough for you to be here and you lost your fear and.
Yeah.
You're not sweating, so.
Oh, no, actually, I am.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Chelsea. It's been wonderful having you.
It's been so great being here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Now, if you wouldn't mind, if people want to get in contact with you, email address or a Facebook page or...
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, my Facebook page is Chelsea Hickman-Playwright, so you can find me there. And you can also find me at my website. It's chelseahickman.weebly.com. And yeah, that's how you can get in contact with me.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay, Chelsea Hickman, thank you so much for joining us. And it's just been delightful having you in the studio.
Well, I've been
and I hope your first radio interview was fun.
Oh, it was so much fun.
Good. Good. Next week, I don't remember who we have. We have a judge.
A judge?
I'm pretty sure. I don't remember. That's what happens when you get really old and you just forget stuff. But we have... the third week in November is the Out West Concert Series once again, but that is Dennis J. I think he's from Texas. He is the last concert of the year for 2016. And those tickets, again, you can buy at 661-347-9700. Or you can go to Out West, SCVOutWest.com, and you can pick up tickets online there at their entertainment section. And with that being said, thank you so much for joining us. It's been another wonderful evening in the Writer's Block and having Chelsea Hickman with us and the whole slew of people in the studio. Holy crap. Take us 20 minutes to herd them all out of here. And I hope you tune in next week, and we've just had a wonderful time, and thank you so much for joining us. And we'll be back next Thursday, 7 o'clock, here on LA Talk Radio.